Super Real.
Hey, I'm Julian Morgans, and you're listening to What It Was Like, the show that asks people who have lived through big, dramatic events what it was like. So my whole life, I've always wanted to time travel. I think some people get excited about the idea of flying or telepathy, but my dream superpower, whenever I get asked, it's time travel. Whenever I'm in a pub, I find myself looking at the framed black and white photos on the walls, because you know how most pubs in Australia, they seem to all have photos of moustached men posing next to their horses all over the walls. And I can just look at those photos for hours. I just stare at them, picking out the little details, you know, the font on the signage, the way that the roads were unpaved back then. And I just try to get lost in those photos. I just try to imagine the smell of horse dung over wisps of wood smoke. And I really try to picture how it would smell and feel and look to go back in time. But I can't. So I think maybe that's why I love watching TV shows and movies so much. I think period shows are about as close as I can get to time travel, which is why, and this is a long segue here, it's why I was so happy when Paramount offered to sponsor our show. So you'll have probably noticed that our show is covered in ads at the moment for the new show on Paramount Plus, A Gentleman in Moscow. And look, I'm sorry for covering the show in ads, but I'm also not, because that's how we get paid. But I'm also especially not sorry, because it's genuinely an awesome show, and I'm 4 episodes in, and I'm loving it. And I think one of my favorite things about it is that it's as close to time traveling as I can get. And it's just pulled me back through time and space to this fancy Russian hotel in the 1920s. And the set design, the costumes, just the attention to detail, it's so incredible. I'm a big fan of Wes Anderson, just like basically everyone else. And this show, it's got that really beautiful Wes Anderson-esque aesthetic, but maybe it's less cartoonish. It's got this rugged edge to it, and it really draws you in. Anyway, so when the guys at Paramount were like, hey, can you make a branded episode about the show? I was kind of like, maybe. But then I was watching the show and indulging in my lifelong desire to time travel, and I realized I do actually have this very genuine question about the show. And it's this: how does someone recreate the past that well, like in that level of detail? How do Hollywood set designers know so much about what things looked like a century ago? How do they know what was trending in hotel architecture, what was happening in fashion, and what the world's fanciest chefs were cooking in hotels, and what technology people were and weren't using? How do people almost give me this experience of time travel? So I asked to speak with the production designer on A Gentleman in Moscow, and that's who I'm talking with today. His name is Victor Molero, and he originally studied fine arts in Spain, but now he spends his life designing and building elaborate sets for all sorts of films and TV shows. And Victor told me everything he knows about the delicate art of sending an audience back in time. And surprisingly, it turns out that recreating the past is a lot like recreating a dream. It's a weird mix of fact, fiction, and memory. But we'll get to that. So, I bring you Victor Molero. Victor, welcome to the show.
Hi, Julian. Thank you. Happy to be here.
No, thank you. Let's start with how you got into the film and TV industry. How did you become a production designer?
I'm coming from a family from the south of Spain that they are artisans, and I think I have in my heritage this kind of creative side, and I always, you know, when I was a kid, I was really, really amazed about films and theater or these kind of things, and I studied fine arts, and I finished my specialty in Madrid. And suddenly someone said, I know someone that is doing a short film and they need people to help.
Victor makes it sound easy. He basically just met the director, who looked at his work as an artist and hired him on the spot as a set designer. He was 24 years old and doing his first feature film. And when I point out that that's not how things usually go for fine arts students, he agreed. He just happened to be graduating at a time when a lot of films were shooting in Spain. So it was a case of right time, right place. So Victor has been a production designer since the 90s. He's done a bunch of TV shows and movies you might have seen, stuff like The Culprits, starring Uma Thurman, and Saving Grace with Julianne Moore, and a little favorite of mine, The Way, with Martin Sheen. So all of the production design in those films, that came from Victor. And in all cases, he says that to him, the set is basically just a way to tell a story with spaces.
I think I've been always attracted by stories, but my tool is not the writing, is the space. So I like to tell a story through the spaces. I think Hitchcock was always saying that it's better to tell the story by image than by a dialogue, because it's that cinema, you know, you are telling, if you see something, it's something can tell you many different things about the story.
His point is that if you ever see a character sitting in a room painted red, you'll understand something different than if you'd seen a character sitting in a room painted white, even if that process works on you in a subconscious way. But then we got down to business. I wanted to know how he recreates the past. So I asked him how he first started on the job for A Gentleman in Moscow.
Normally a producer called me to say, Victor, we have this story. And with this director, we are going to recreate this story that is, for example, in this case, is in Bolshevik revolutionary times, beginning of 20th century. So they gave me the script, and we started to develop the story in many different visual ways.
Okay, all right. So the whole series takes place inside the Hotel Metropole. And my understanding is that you started this job by going, okay, we're going to need a grand old hotel. Then you kind of couldn't find one that looked impressive enough. Tell me about that.
When the producer called me and the showrunner, Ben Buston, he's amazing, they thought at the beginning to shoot the whole thing in the north of England, in around Manchester, Liverpool, that area. When they told me about this idea, I thought, I worked before in that area, in the north of England, so I know very well the area, and I thought, that's never going to happen. So they said, okay, if we cannot find the location where we are going to do, I said, we need to design it and to build the whole hotel. So we took the decision in just like, I remember that was like a week or something like that. So we need to design the whole hotel and we need to build it. And I think it was like 4 months or 5 months to start the shooting.
I'll just repeat that because it's kind of wild. Victor decided to not shoot in a pre-existing hotel and to not even look for a hotel, but instead to just embark on designing and building a fake hotel on a soundstage in the north of England, knowing full well that it'd have less than 5 months before they started shooting. And to the average punter, that might sound like loads of time, but keep in mind that if you're building a fake hotel, it's basically the same as building a real hotel. It's just that you can't push back the opening date. They've got A-list actors and directors and cinematographers contracted to start at a particular time, and you can't go over. That's a big decision to make. Kind of stressful.
It was. So yeah. It's funny because they took, it was built at the beginning of 20th century. I think it was 1902 or something like that. But I think they took 5 years to build it, the real Metropole Hotel. We designed it and built it in 5 months.
So you've decided to build a fake hotel. Where do you start with that? I mean, do you literally start with a blueprint? Do you map it out? How many rooms we're going to need and what they're going to look like?
I think I'm really fast designing. But I think I have like maybe 10 days to do the research. So okay. It's nothing, you know, it's just like you. And of course, I have a background, I have education, I know the period, and I know, you know, how was the architecture at that time. And I think maybe I need to explain to you before, you know, I think when you are you taking decision about the design, you are taking decision about characters. And what this is the backstory that I was telling you before. You know, if I wanted to tell the story, the Metropole in the series is another character.
I think
you need to go with that, because that's why I was telling you before that for me it's more important the character that the period, to be accurate with the period, or it's more about to follow the story and to be a companion of the story with the character.
Right.
And to follow your intuition, taking the design decisions.
Sure. Rather than sticking rigorously to history.
More in this case, because the story is not a recreation of the of that period. It's more about a tale. So I think it was important to fill the time, but at the same time, it was important to follow the story. That was my way to go.
What Victor was saying is that actually he doesn't stick rigorously to history. So I was watching his show thinking, oh my God, look at those details. They're so specific. They can't possibly be made up. But actually Victor revealed to me that he's borrowing real things, like real ideas, from places that aren't historical. As in, he makes design decisions based on what feels right rather than what's in the books. And sometimes that means borrowing inspiration from his own life.
In the middle of the lobby, there is I designed a bench. And that bench for me was like when you go to a station and you see a bench and people is waiting there. Yeah. That for me was the bench for the count. Because the only thing that he do is to see people going in and out. And he's waiting. He's waiting what's going to happen with his life. So for me, it's a kind of metaphor of his life, the bench. And that's why I put it there. People will read it or not, but it's funny because this idea is coming from a song that I love, it from a Spanish songwriter, singer called Serrat, and it's called Penelope. And it's about a woman waiting in a station in a bench for his first love.
Nice.
And that's how it came to me, this. So that's the thing, you know, you use all your experience and memories and you put element that can fix the story. And for me, the count is like Penelope waiting his first love or waiting what's going to happen with his life, you know? Mm. And that's why I put that bench. No one will know about it, but I'll know, you know? So that's how for me is the back story. It's adding this kind of layer is how you create the space more interesting and more complex in a way.
And so once Victor had decided to build a set rather than use a pre-existing hotel, he proceeded to cobble together historical elements with bits of inspiration from his own life. He and his team of concept artists, art designers, construction managers, carpenters, electricians, and painters built a sprawling maze of plywood facades across a soundstage. They built a truly enormous hotel lobby with a mezzanine that stretched above and all around it. A big restaurant called the Piazza, a whole section of the hotel's exterior in the studio's backlot, and a section of a Moscow street complete with antique cars. And to top it off, they also built a part of the hotel's roof, also in the studio backlot. It must have been really fun to walk around this huge set that had come out of your brain. You know, this is a mixture of places you've been, of songs that you've been inspired by, just little parts of your life that you've mixed with history, and then it's been built. It's pretty cool.
I think one of the best moments in this project, it was because, you know, I have a lot of respect for someone that created the story. That in this case is Amo, the author, Amo Tolles. And so for me, it was really, really special when Amo, we finished the set and we were shooting and Amo came from New York to meet us. And so he arrived to the set, to the lobby, and it was really special moment. I was I get a bit emotional because it was like this guy, he create in his head all this world that we develop, and to see him there and his face and everything was like, wow. So, it's like, and of course you were part of that, and it was really, really a special moment, I think, in my career.
What was his reaction?
He was very happy. He was amazed. And
yeah.
And he's a great guy. He's a very nice guy. We spent part of the day together, and I was asking many questions about how he created the story, how he was working before. He was a writer. He was working in finance, and he was traveling. Yeah. He was traveling to, he told me that the first idea that he had about this story is because he was traveling to Geneva, I think, every year at the same time in this hotel in Geneva. And he saw, he was seeing every year the same guy in that hotel. So he thought, this guy is living here, or what happened with this guy? So it's how it came to him, the idea of the book.
That's great. That's great. And I was wondering if you had any amusing stories about working with Ewan McGregor.
He's great. What can I say? He's an amazing colleague to work with.
Yeah.
He's really generous, very nice. It's funny because the first time that we met, it's a show and tell we call, and we were showing him all his prop that he will use for his character. And I think it was the first time that we met, and he saw, I have a mustache. I've been wearing my mustache in the last 7 years of my life. It's becoming part of my personality.
Yeah, yeah.
And the character have a mustache is quite relevant,
yes,
in the story. So so he started to ask me about my mustache. so to give him tips on how I'm taking care of my mustache and all that kind of thing. And he was really, really funny and very nice. He's an amazing guy.
Did he actually want moustache advice, or was it just kind of like a fun conversation to get to know each other?
No, he was really curious about how it was to wear a moustache, because he decided to it's a real moustache. So he spent, because he didn't want it to, it's a long project. We spent like 8 months, and he didn't want it to be every day putting his moustache. And so he decided to have it. So it was his first time having that.
Victor. I mean, I've got a bit of a moustache too. I mean, it's not as powerful as yours. But give me your top three moustache tips.
Now I'm going to be an expert of moustache. Oh my god! I think it's more about how to cut the moustache, I think.
Okay.
I think that will be the main one that I will say. I think you need to learn to cut to give the shape that you like it. And of course, treat it well. In a way, I use some oil, hair oil for the moustache as well. So yeah, I'm really proud of my moustache.
You've got that's a fantastic moustache. This is actually really helpful, because I've never trimmed my moustache in any particular shape. I just kind of run the electric razor over the top of it and then hope for the best. So yeah, we talked moustaches for quite a while. And I guess I also had my answer. I'd come in wanting to know how Victor recreates the past. And the answer is, he doesn't. Victor doesn't even have the same longing for time travel as I do. So I've got this idea about traveling back in time, okay? And, well, first of all, I want to know, is that some of the magic for you too? Do you have a desire to go back in time? Does this motivate some of your interest in creating sets and pretend worlds?
It's good, that metaphor about the time machine, because you can recreate whatever you want. I will say that I think it's good to be accurate to the period, but I think I prefer to follow my intuition when I'm doing that, because it's more real when you do that. When I think, in my opinion, reality is boring in a way. you know?
What do you mean? Why?
Because I think what human being like is the stories. And I think the recreation of that, recreate the reality, is double boring in a way. Mm. So I think for me it's more about, it's more efficient to telling a story of the world, or the, of the world that's around you, and if it's more convincing than the reality itself. You know what I mean?
That is, yeah, I definitely do.
So that's why I think it's better to follow your intuition in that way, because if you are very accurate to the reality, can be boring, can be, yeah. You know, I think we have our experience in life. So I think it's better to follow your intuition and to feel free to follow what you need. You know, it's as the story of the bench, you know, I put all my background, all my experience, and my songs, or, you know, and that is how you create something that is more attractive, more interesting. But if you are following only, no, the hotel at that period, it was like that. And I need to do so accurate to that because it's how it is. So that's boring.
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. So as a percentage, if you had to break it down, what percentage of your hotel metropole was historically accurate, and what percentage was just out of your imagination?
Wow, that's a difficult question, Julian. Maybe I will say 40% accurate to the period. The rest will be my intuition on all the story.
Mm. So there you go. About 40% of the set that you're seeing in the show is historically accurate. The rest, as Victor says, is a product of his artistic intuition. And I think that's kind of good, because you want to see the best parts of history, right? Like the best sort of human moments portrayed in a set. You don't necessarily want to see just the way things were. Tell me about your single favorite moment from this experience. I'm wondering if there was a moment on set where you saw a particular take that you just fell in love with, or is there a moment that you walked by yourself through the set and just, you know, took it in and you said to yourself, wow, Victor, you've really done well. Or like, give me a vignette that you were really happy about.
I think it's, you know, I think the most touching moment for me, it was when we finished, when we did the last shot in the lobby. And I knew that after that shot, we will destroy the whole set. It was my last 9 months of my life, completely, you know. And I went there to see the last shot, and I saw Yuan, and he said something like, I went to him and said, you know, this is the last shot. And he said, yes. And he said something really nice about, like, I felt so good with this set, Victor, and I felt really attached to this space. Thank you. And it was for me very, like, wow. You know, very, very,
that's
very
beautiful.
Nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's maybe is for me the moment, the one what I can remember most.
Okay, that's great. I mean, you spent months of your life, as you say, building, designing, working around this set. Did you see it getting torn down, or did anyone send you any photos? Did you feel emotional about that?
So they started to put everything down, and I saw it. It's a really weird feeling, but yes.
Yeah. Does it all just go to the tip, or do pieces of it get kept?
It's funny because we try to sell. There is a kind of a bar, American bar, that we designed and we built, and we gave to another production. So there are some bits that we try to recycle, but most of them is on the bin. Of course we try to save some part, and we recycle some part as well for other productions.
Okay. What did you learn from this experience?
It's a difficult question. I think is what I did really well in this project is to follow my intuition. Mm. And And I think it's, I will say, I think the intuition for me is something that I've been working on it. And I think it's the best way to go when you feel confident about and you like the story. So that's what I learned is follow your intuition and you will be right.
And to have confidence in your intuition.
Yeah, right.
Because I think that's the hard part. You can have your intuition, but unless you trust yourself, it doesn't help.
It's the most important thing when you need to take important decision about, you know, it wasn't only about you, it's so many people, so much money involved that the best way is to believe in you and to feel confident to take the right decision.
Yeah, yeah. And my last question is, if you could get in a time machine and go back to any historical period in the history of the world, what would it be?
It's funny because I will go to more or less the same period, beginning of the 20th century, and I will go to the south of Spain to know someone.
Oh, yeah. Who's waiting for you there?
It's a poet, a Spanish poet, called Federico García Lorca, that he was born in my born city in Granada, and I would love to meet him and to know him.
Okay, is this someone from your own life or someone you've read about?
It's someone that I read about. It's funny because my family has some contact with his family. It's a really important poet. He did Wedding Blood, or he's an author. He's a poet and a theater author that has been always a big influence on me, and I was really, really interested to meet him for different things. He was killed in the civil war in Spain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's really interesting, is that I came to this with my obsession for the past all about aesthetics and the buildings and the costumes, and you're the set designer, and yet your interest in the past is the people, and you want to meet this poet. It's unexpected.
I told you, I think I'm more interested about people than about styles or ornaments, you know. Yeah. I think it's more, I've been faithful with myself in that way, you know.
It's true. All right, well, Victor, I'm going to let you go, but thanks so much. I've really enjoyed this.
And me too. Thank you. It's been great.
So that was Victor. And what did I learn? It's funny because I think talking to Victor confirmed something that I believe too, that often the unadulterated and totally objective truth is boring. And what did I learn about time travel? I guess I thought that TV shows and movies were the closest thing I could get to going back in time. But actually, maybe they're just the more emotive snapshots of the past we have. And they're emotive because they're not real. They're embellishments. They're fairy tales. And maybe it's possible that if I got in a time machine, like if I really got in a time machine and went back 100 years and then stumbled out onto this street full of horses and people smoking pipes, you know, I'd inhale deeply and go, actually, this is kind of like the present. You know, maybe it would just feel oddly familiar and not at all like the parallel universe that I'd be hoping for. And maybe what I really enjoy is just the made-up fantasy universe of film. Because maybe, when it comes down to it, that's the more exciting form of reality.
See Victor's vision of the Grand Metropole Hotel come to life. A Gentleman in Moscow is now streaming, only on Paramount Plus. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Tuffery. It was mixed by Jimmy Saunders, who also did our theme music. Evie Atkins is our intern. Our cover art is by Naomi Lee Beveridge, and this whole thing has been a Super Real production.